guitar people, welcome to Have Guitar Wheel Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with guitarist Jim Kimo West, who is a slack key guitarist and plays guitar with Weird Al Yankovic. In our conversation, Jim discusses his current tour schedule with George Kahumoku and with Weird Al later in the summer. Jim takes us through his musical history growing up in Canada and moving to Florida at a young age, playing in bands and eventually moving to LA and quickly becoming a member of Weird Al's band. Jim tells us how he came to embrace slack key guitar after a post-tour trip to Maui and how playing and writing slack key songs for fun started a second career. Jim talks about meeting Frank Zappa and Glenn Frey while playing guitar in a cover band in Tampa, and Jim takes us through his gear early on, Telecasters, Les Pauls, and Fender Bassmans and Marshalls, and his gear now, Tom Anderson Strat types, and the Fractal Axe FX 3 and the FM9 and Taylor guitars for his slack key gigs. He also takes us through his pickup system for his Taylors and the banjo tuners he uses. Jim discusses working with Rick Derringer, who produced Weird Al's early albums and eventually became a mentor to Jim. And Jim describes what it's like to work and tour with Weird Al and the special gear he's used for different gigs throughout the years. Finally, Jim tells us about his collaboration with Josh Jaffe and their latest album, Delphinus. To find out more about Jim, you can go to his website, jimkimowest.com. That's JimKimowest.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Oh, and hey, if you want to support the show, I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/haveguitarwheeltravelpodcast. Here's my buddy Kimo.
Hey there, Jim.
Hey, James.
How are you?
I'm good. What's I like your room there, man. You got some cool stuff. What is that, electric sitar in the back?
Oh, it is, yeah. The one that Jerry Jones made, the recreation.
Oh, right. Yeah, how cool. Oh, man, that's awesome.
Well, it's an honor to meet you.
You too.
I appreciate your time.
Where are you based?
I'm in Napa, California. So you're
great.
Coming up this way this weekend.
Yes, yeah. I used to play at the Blue Note quite a lot until they moved or shut down. I guess they're now in San Francisco now.
They haven't opened up the place in San Francisco yet. The same building is called the Napa Music Hall, I believe, now.
Oh, so they still have music and stuff.
Just about to reopen. I think in May they're going to reopen.
Oh, okay. Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always loved playing there. That was a fun place to play.
Sure. It's intimate, for sure.
Did you play
upstairs or downstairs?
It was just, I don't know, not upstairs, that's for sure. Yeah, I remember seeing they had a big room upstairs. Yeah, it was just the regular Blue Note club area, you know,
Very blue.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I'll be up there with George, well, not Napa, but I'll be up to
Livermore.
Livermore and Santa Cruz and down Redwood City, yeah.
Yeah. Do you, how often are you touring?
Well, you know, this tour with George is I've known George for many, many years, but we've never really toured together. He started the slack key show on Maui.
Yeah.
And I've played that over the years many, many, many times. And, you know, we've played together on the radio, we've played together at festivals, but we've never really done a tour. So George and his wife Nancy had recently moved back to Santa Cruz. They lived on Maui for years, and they had some history in Santa Cruz and some family and stuff. And so when they moved back, George, you know, wanted to do some California shows. So he approached me about it, and I was up for doing it. And we did. We had 3 sold out shows down here in Southern California. We played at McCabe's, which is a famous place.
Sure, absolutely.
And a couple other really nice venues. And then, we've been having a good time. And then, you know, my day job is I play with Weird Al. So sure. I will be doing 90 shows with Al.
Oh, wow.
Starting May 26th. 90 shows.
And what kind of venues?
You know, basically sheds and pretty good sized venues. It's kind of it's the larger version of the tour with all the big production. And I think we have like 3 semis and 3 buses.
Wow.
And video screens. And we did the same tour last year. And the venues were like, Red Rocks.
Oh, wow.
Madison Square Gardens and the Forum here in LA. And everything was sold out. It was all sold out. It was crazy.
Well, people love you and Al.
I mean, the audience is everywhere from 8 to 80, you know.
Yeah.
And so we're basically, you know, since that last year was so successful, they decided just to do it again. And we're not playing Madison Square Gardens again, but we are playing Red Rocks again.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, which is a lovely venue. I've played that about four times. It's really lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so I'll be busy.
Yeah, you will. How'd you get hooked up with Slack Key Music? I mean, you're originally from Ontario, is that correct?
You know, I was born in Canada, yeah. So the short story is my family moved to Florida when I was like nine, so I kind of grew up there. I started playing music there when I was I started playing guitar when I was about 12, and I think I started playing professionally when I was 16. Uh-huh. Rock and roll, you know, yeah. And then at a certain point, I knew I had to come to L.A. or New York, you know, to get ahead. I had, at the point, it was in my mid to late 20s. I had, you know, kind of like the best gig you could get, and I was partners in a studio, and it was basically like nowhere else to go, you know. So I thought, I'm gonna have to move, and I headed to LA, and it wasn't too long after that I met Al, and then we were on tour in the mid 80s, doing a tour, and one of the guys on the tour who was in the crew, he invited me to go to Maui after the tour to visit, to hang out with a friend of his, and I'd never been to Hawaii, so when we got there, they had all these great Hawaiian music records, you know, and the stuff that really resonated me was the Hawaiian slack key, because I could tell it was all in open tunings, which I was, you know, had played around with before. Uh-huh. And the music just felt, it fit the place, you know, where I was staying on Maui was out in Hana, so it's very rural, it's horses and chickens and, you know, two little stores and one gas station, and, you know,
yeah.
And so that music just really felt like it was kind of coming out of the ground, you know, and
yeah.
So I just like to listen to it for many years, and it wasn't until, geez, maybe 10 years later that I had heard so much of it that I just started writing my own slack key songs, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess at one point I would record them so I wouldn't forget them, and then
yeah.
Somebody said, well, you've got 12 songs, why don't you make a CD? And I hadn't even considered it, you know, I just was doing it for fun. Another friend of mine, you know, was an artist and said, you know, well, I'll do the cover. And all of a sudden I had a CD, and then I had record release party in Honolulu and Maui, and I met everybody in the Hawaiian music industry, and I got invited to play the Slack Key Festival on Maui. And
oh, wow.
And it just kind of, you know, I started playing little gigs, you know, and in those days we'd play at places like Borders and Barnes and Noble and,
sure, yeah.
And small gigs like that. And, which is a little terrifying because I was used to playing in bands, you know, where there's a singer and, you know, all the attention is on the singer. But all of a sudden, you know, there it is, a whole crowd of people waiting to hear what I can do, you know, and it's just me.
Yeah.
And also I was using a lot of different tunings. So, you know, I wasn't as familiar with them as I am now. You know, I had to kind of like, I think I even had some cheat sheets for a couple of tunings. You know? Cause you know, you play a chord in one tuning and it does not translate to the other.
Yeah. You mentioned Hawaiian music establishment. Did you ever work with George at it when George was doing the camps, the Slack Key camps? Did you ever do any of those?
Yeah. I've taught there two or three times, and I'm going to do it again next year in 2027. Okay. I'll be doing it. But yeah, that is those camps are fantastic. It's a week at Napili Bay, which is one of the most beautiful beaches in Hawaii.
Yeah.
The resort is incredible, and it's just a week of music. And the instructors, you know, we play a lot of music together, you know, which is incredibly fun, you know.
Of course.
I mean, there have been some moments. I remember there was one few years back I was teaching, Ken Emerson and I were both teaching there. We had done some collaborations before. Ken's a great slack key and steel player, acoustic steel player. And we had a little, after, you know, late night jam on Leadward Kapana's lanai, and
oh,
it was
wow.
just the three of us. And we were trying to play kind of quiet because we didn't want to, you know, wake anybody up. And it sounded so good. It was like, man, if we could have just recorded that. And it was funny because we looked up and there were all these people on the balcony up above, like, listening. But there were some great moments. And, you know, just sharing what you know is always fun. I'm not, you know, I don't have a big teaching program or anything, but it's fun to, you know, it's fun to share your knowledge and pass it on. And, you know, it's definitely, I really enjoy doing that. So yeah, I'll do that again next year in June.
Okay. You mentioned Ledward. Have you had opportunity to like you're doing with George, right? Do you play shows with Led?
You know, I've never really played any tours, you know, formal shows with Led. I've played with him many, many times, you know, at festivals and you know, just casual things like that. But we've never really done any real gigs together. I did, back in the day, I did play some double bills with Cyril Paganui, who's no longer with us. But yeah. Cyril was a very good friend of mine, and I really liked Cyril a lot. And Leverett's great. He's so funny. In fact, sometimes, you know, his pigeon, you know, everybody speaks pidgin in Hawaii, and, sure. and his is so thick, as we say. Sometimes it's, you know, he's talking to the audience, and I don't think anybody can understand what he's saying, but he's having such a good time and laughing that everybody laughs anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, what did he say? I don't know, but he's really funny.
Oh, yeah. And quite a character. How about Keola? Have you had the opportunity to work with Keola at all?
No, you know, I know Keola, and we've met, and it's funny because, you know, when I was telling you I had a record release party in Honolulu for my first album, and my publicist, she had invited, you know, lots of people and different artists, and one of the artists was Ozzy Kotani, who's a great slack key player.
Sure.
I don't know that he's doing much nowadays, but anyway, Ozzy, you know, he came up to me and said afterwards and said, you know, oh, you know, some of your stuff reminds me a bit of Keola Beamer. And I had only really heard Keola, the Beamer brothers,
sure.
you know, they had Honolulu City Lights was a big hit. And
of course.
I remember that, but I was not familiar with Keola's solo slack key.
Uh-huh.
So after he told me that, I went and looked it up and started hearing it. And it was like, oh, yeah, I love this. You know, he's got a lot of soul in his playing.
Yeah,
and solo records on Dancing Cat were fantastic. I used to keep them in my car when I'd have to drive on the freeway.
Mail you out.
Yeah.
Do you have a place in Hawaii?
Not anymore. I did with my ex. We had a place out in Hana. Well, it's actually her family's place.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time out there, and then when I'd be, of course, touring and stuff, I'd be here on the mainland, but I do have a place that I can stay out there. My brother lives out there.
Oh, cool.
Out in Nahiku, which is near Hana. So I'm out there, you know, pretty often, a couple times a year anyway, you know, and usually I'll play at Uncle George's show in the Pili, the slack key show, and
sure.
then go out to Hana for a week, you know.
Yeah,
mellow out.
Is Maui your, like, your home island?
Yeah. Maui is where I lived, but I've been going to Kauai for many years too.
Uh-huh.
So my wife and I will usually go to Kauai in November around Thanksgiving.
Sure.
And I've been doing that for many years, and uh-huh. I have a lot of music friends there, a lot of musician friends and songwriters, and
yeah.
I usually, when I go to Kauai, I never book any shows, although I have played at the Kauai Slack Key Festival many times.
Sure.
But I never really book any shows. I like to go and just not have to worry about promoting an event, and
yeah.
you know, and I end up playing with all my friends at their gigs, you know? so I, like, every night of the week I'm playing with somebody pretty much, you know.
Yeah.
But just for fun, you know.
Any particular part of the island on Kauai that you like to spend time?
Well, I'm always on that. We stay on the North Shore.
Oh.
You know, north side, Hanalei, Princeville area.
Yeah.
I've stayed, you know, I think when I first started going to Kauai, I stayed on the South Shore. I just found myself always driving to the North Shore, and I
yeah.
thought, well, I'm just going to start staying up here.
Yeah.
I like the North Shore. It can be a little rainier, but
there's
just something kind of magical about it.
Oh,
know?
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You mentioned that, so you were living in Florida, and you had you were owning a studio and playing in a band. What band were you playing with?
Well, there was a big club called Robocondi's, and it was like, kind of like, maybe they had sort of envisioned like a big Studio 54, except with a stage with a live band.
Uh-huh.
So it had it had a big stage with a big sound system, lighting, a sound engineer, and it was a house gig. I could just leave my guitar there, you know.
Oh, right on.
You know, I played there for almost 2 years. You know, it's funny because the guy who owned the club or ran it, he actually would name the band, you know, and it was a really good band. It was some of the, you know, best players in town. In fact, Frank Zappa came in a couple times. And
wow.
It was the club kind of place where any rock stars who had a night off and they wanted to go some to the hot place, they would all. I met a lot of people there. Glenn Frey and Zappa came in. And Zappa one time came in and, you know, he was very complimentary, you know, because we were mostly doing covers.
Yeah.
Real current stuff. And he, you know, I think I remember him saying that it was the best cover band he had seen, you know. And he actually took some phone numbers. He took my phone number and the bass player's phone number.
Oh, right on.
And I never got called, but the our bass player did. He ended up auditioning for Frank.
Wow.
Didn't get the gig, but, you know, it's Frank was notorious for auditions. You know, he just put like, the black page or some of those things in front of you and just like, okay, go. You know, it's like, can I have an hour to work on it? No. Next. But anyway, I forget the name of the band. I think at one point it was called Rough Cut. Mm-hmm. But I think it went through like three different iterations. But I was there for almost 2 years, you know, and it was a great gig. I mean,
was it in Miami?
Nice gig. No, in Tampa.
Oh, in Tampa.
Yeah, yeah. It was a fantastic gig, and it enabled me to do all kinds of other things and play music every night without moving around. And
yeah, and. When you started on guitar, were you in Ontario when you started, or were you?
No, that was after I moved to Florida. You know, my older brother had played. You know, he used to play like kind of like folk songs and things like that. And he had an old guitar in the closet, and I think it was missing some strings. And I, you know, started noodling around on it when I was about 12. And he saw that I was interested, so he went out and got some strings and a book and a capo and, you know, stuff. And
yeah.
And once I got going on it, I was just like, that was it. You know, I was zoning in on, I don't, that guitar was probably really hard to play too. It was an old arch top of some kind.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, that was kind of no turning back at that point.
Yeah. And who were your guys? I mean, apart from your brother, who were your guys when you were coming up?
Well, you know, my older brother, like I said, he played a lot of folk music, and being from Canada, of course, he liked people like Gordon Lightfoot and,
sure.
You know, some of those Canadian artists, and of course, Dylan and Joni Mitchell, and, you know, so he, you know, that was kind of good, because some of the first stuff I learned was finger picking, because it was like the folk music thing, and that really served me well, because Hawaiian slack key is all finger style.
Yes, exactly, you know? Exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, at first it was just... folks stuff that he had listened to, you know, and I was work, you know, I'd play those kind of songs, and, you know, and then I started, you know, getting to the point where I was buying my own albums and listening to Simon and Garfunkel and of course the Beatles, and
yeah.
Eventually probably when I was maybe 14, I got an electric guitar. You know, I got more into rock and roll, you know, and
sure.
I think my first, my first electric guitar wasn't even mine. My friend loaned me a guitar. In fact, he loaned me a guitar and an amp. I guess you could call it an amp, but it was a Moserite Ventures model guitar.
Yeah, right on.
You know, with a little thin neck. And then the amp was something some friend had made from him out of an old radio. And
oh,
it was
wow.
like, and he had a homemade speaker cabinet, which he kind of covered in this white pseudo, like, custom, you know, the custom amps, the rolled and pleated kind of thing.
Sure.
And it had this radio tube chassis on it. And it was funny because I guess they probably modified the phono input to plug the guitar into.
Exactly.
So it just totally overloaded, and it was all you could get was just like screaming distortion and feedback. And of course, that was pretty cool. You know? And then eventually I got I think my parents got me a little guitar. It was like a little Vox solid body. And then when I started making my own money, I bought a brand new Telecaster, which I wish I had right now, because it'd be worth a fortune.
Yeah.
And I had a a borrowed Fender Bassman. So when I first played my first gigs in a band when I was 16 was with a, or 15 or 16 was with a Telecaster and a Fender Bassman.
A Tweed Bassman?
Not a bad, no, it was a Blackface.
Okay.
Blackface Bassman. And then of course, you know, I got more into heavier rock, and so I liked it. Within a year or two, I had a Les Paul and a 100-watt Marshall.
Oh, right on. Wow.
A single cabinet, but a 100-watt head.
You know? Yeah, that was loud.
And I wish I had that, too, because that was before they had the master volume.
Yeah, exactly. You know? When they sounded great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd play gigs, and it would always be on, like, 1.5, you know?
Did you play in bands in high school? Were you, like, in, you know, local bands?
Not really. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much the transition from high school. I started college early, around I was 16. So it was kind of around 16 when I first started playing in bands.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, I was an art major in college, but I, you know, the music thing was really cool, and I was making money, and it was just like, yeah, I don't know about this art thing. I just kind of went with the music, and you know, that's where it started. But but it was, yeah, it was fun to play. I always, sometimes I tell the story. The first gig I played was some band that had been put together just for one gig. Then and they had booked this gig at this some kind of festival, small festival in Central Florida. Mm-hmm. I think it was called the Strawberry Festival or something like that. So it was an actual grandstand with, like, you know, hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And we had a, you know, we had a singer and some backup singers and all this stuff. And I remember it was my first gig playing in front of people. And I had a very simple setup. I think I had my Telecaster and Bassman, and I had a wah-wah pedal. I think it was my only effect. So I was using the wah-wah pedal, but I was so nervous that my foot was shaking. So it was like, wah-wah-wah-wah-wah. And afterwards, somebody was like, hey, how'd you get that cool sound, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a thrill to, you know, be out there playing music and, you know, getting paid for it when you're a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. You were told me that you decided to move from Florida to LA. Had you been to LA before?
No, I hadn't. The way it worked out was Steve, who still plays bass with Weird Al, he had moved. He went to LA to audition for Zappa, and then uh-huh. he decided that he would stay in LA because there was, you know, lots of opportunities
and less humidity.
And at a certain point, like a year later, he'd been playing in some bands, and then he called me and said that he had met this great band and they were looking for a guitarist. So he put us in touch. And, you know, I kind of joined the band after sending tapes and things back and forth. And uh-huh. and they said, well, you know, we have gigs. Just come on out, you know. So I think I was playing a gig like 3 days after I got to L.A.
Wow. And did you bring the Telecaster with you?
You know, at that point, I didn't have it. I had gone from Telecaster. You know, in those days, like if I wanted a different guitar, I would have to sell the other one.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
So I think I got rid of the Telecaster to get a Les Paul.
Uh-huh.
And then I was playing so many gigs in Florida, and sometimes these would be 3 or 4 sets, you know, a night. That thing was so heavy.
Yeah.
I got, okay, I'm getting a Strat. So I came out with a couple of Strats is what I came with. You know,
okay.
I didn't have the Les Paul anymore. I wish I did. It'd be another one of those ones that would be worth a lot. But
was it a 70s,
but anyway,
70s Les Paul probably?
It was like a 70. Yeah, like 70, 71, 71 uh-huh. Deluxe, the yeah. small pickups, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was beautiful, cherry sunburst. It was a nice guitar. And but yeah, I came out with some Strats and a couple of amps and this and that. And
how did you land the gig with Weird Al?
Well, Steve, the bass player who introduced me to the band, he had somehow through some connect, I'm not sure how, but he had got the call to play on Al's very first album when he first got his record deal. So this was produced by Rick Derringer.
Yeah.
Al had decided he wanted to do a few gigs, you know, and maybe do a small tour, and he needed to put a band together. He already had a drummer,
uh-huh.
and then he'd met Steve, so he needed a guitarist. He put me in touch with Al. I wasn't really sure who he was, but he had gigs
and
you know, lined up, and so I went and auditioned, and he called me one day and said, "Hey, you got the gig?" And it's like, okay. At that point, I was probably playing in 4 different bands, you know, as we all did in LA,
yeah,
playing
yeah.
a lot of these clubs where you play original music, you wouldn't make much money, you know, everybody was playing in a lot of bands. So, but even from the beginning, when I was learning his songs, I realized that they were very well crafted, you know, even those early ones.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They were, you know, it was, you could tell it wasn't just thrown together. It was like, these are really thought out, yeah. You know, and then we went in the studio again with Rick Derringer producing. We did the In 3D album, which, you know, hit right. Well, the other album, the first album, came out right around MTV, when MTV was starting.
Yeah.
So they played the videos. There were a couple of videos from that record that played on MTV all the time. So then when we did the next record that had the parody of Beat It, Eat It, you know, a gigantic hit on MTV, produced by Rick Derringer. On that album, I played all the rhythm stuff, but Rick played all the solos. You know?
Oh, so okay.
I remember when we were going to do the... Al wanted to have this kind of concept of the guitar solo, like going crazy and exploding, and you know,
yeah.
So that was the concept in the video, but which I was in. But I think Rick was. I remember I had learned the Eddie Van Halen solo, and I kind of, you know, and Rick was like, well, you know, show me how it goes, you know, and I kind of showed it to him, and then he went off and learned it and did it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I think after that album, you know, by that point, you know, when that album hit, we were starting to do real tours with tour buses and everything. And, you know, the subsequent albums, I pretty much played everything.
Yeah.
And Rick produced four or five albums.
What was it like working with Rick Derringer?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, I was a fan of, I mean, not so much from the McCoys, because that was a little before my time, but... I mean, I remember it, but I used to have that record, Johnny Winter and.
Oh, yeah.
It was Johnny Winter, was Rick Derringer.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a great record, you know. And of course, Rick wrote Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. And so he was like a mentor, you know. He hung out with he took me out to BC Rich Guitars and got me an endorsement and
made me
custom guitars.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We would go to clubs and hang out. And, you know, when he was in town to work on the records, on, you know, our free time, we'd go do stuff like that, you know. So I hung out with Rick a lot. Yeah, amazing player. You know, he just had a great touch and a great sound. I learned a lot from Rick Derringer. Yeah.
So for that first tour that you're doing with Weird Al, what was your gear for that tour?
Oh man, I think I had I have a 1970 Strat. I still have it. It's like a natural finish, kind of really heavy, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't have the tremolo. It had the fixed bridge, you know, and then I think my amp was like a Roland Jazz Chorus, you know, with a couple of pedals in front of it. Yeah, I think that's what I had. God. Yeah, it was pretty minimal. And over the years, of course, it went to different things. I was always experimenting with stuff. I had, for a while, I had... a modified Marshall, and I also had a nice Fender, and maybe the Jazz Chorus too. I think I had my effects going through just the Jazz Chorus, and the I had a little switching system that somebody made for me, and and then at one point I found a digital mixer. I think it was made by Simmons, and I had the idea that I could plug different preamps into each channel and then, you know, blend them. And
it actually
worked. It was kind of cool.
Yeah. Did you ever had Ken Bradshaw make you a rig?
No. The guy who was doing my who did a few things for me was a guy named Lee Jackson.
Oh, sure.
And he used to modify Marshalls, and so he, you know,
yeah.
I was working with him quite a bit. And then I had later on, I had more when, you know, people got into the rack systems. I had a big rack system that was built by a guy named Brian Swordfeger, who turned me on to Tom Anderson guitars, which I still play. And, you know, it was one of those big rack. It wasn't a gigantic refrigerator, but it still had a lot of, you know, like three different preamps and effects and compressors and MIDI switcher. And I think it was like a Rocktron MIDI switcher, but it was all tweaked out, and it was quite nice. And a couple of boogie cabinets for stereo.
Oh, wow.
It was a great sounding rig, but, you know, with all those connections and everything, there, you know, all it would take was one little jack to come loose, and then it would be like, you know, sweating it, you know, trying to figure out what's wrong, and I simplified it and went with a smaller thing, and And then eventually, you know, years later, I just went to Fractal Axifax, you know. And then now my signal chain is, you know, people ask me, what's your signal chain? Well, the guitar goes into the Fractal, and then out of that goes to the PA.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. How quiet is the stage when you guys are?
Stage is nowadays is extremely quiet. I mean, we have plexiglass around the drums. And the only other thing that makes any noise, physical noise, are we have a couple horn players. But it's real quiet. Yeah, we use inner monitors, and yeah, the consistency is really great. And I've been using the Fractal stuff for a number of years, and right now I'm using Axifax 3. Well, I have two of them because, you know, you have to have two of everything touring.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I've got a little switch thing to have. If one ever went out, I could hit a switch and it would go to the other one. You know?
Yeah.
But I never really had many problems with them. They're pretty reliable, and and I like to tweak, you know, and get in there and tweak. I even use a Fractal, a small the floor one, the FM9. I use that for my acoustic slack key gigs. Yeah, I mean, it has all the elements you know you need. So I just created my own presets. You know. My guitars have two pickups. You know, there's a sound hole and a PA, bridge pickup.
Sure.
So I create this kind of stereo spread, and, you know, customize the compression and the EQ and the effects, and it's very plug and play. I've done these international guitar night tours, and we do a sound check, and I just say, give me two XLR plugs and just pan them hard, and that's the mix, and they usually don't have to do anything. You know, it's like pre-mixed. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And what about monitors when you're doing that?
Well, on the acoustic shows, there's always stage monitors. So I don't bring anything myself. I just use what the venue has, you know.
All right.
I mean, you could. I have a couple of speakers that it's called Red Sound, and they're like they're made for Fractal-type instruments, made for modelers, you know. Great-sounding speakers. They're made in Europe. If I needed to, I could bring those and have my own, like, really nice stereo monitor system, you know.
Yeah, yeah. As far as the pickups and the acoustic guitars, what are you using for pickups?
Well, I've been using these Taylor guitars, which I'll show you right here.
Sure.
This is a Fishman Rare Earth pickup. And it's actually got a little microphone, so if you want, you can kind of blend a little bit of that. I don't use much of it, you know, maybe a tiny bit.
Yeah.
Then it's the Taylor pickup is, you know, in here, but I'm using these prototypes. They haven't released them yet.
Oh, okay.
But I've sort of beta tested their preamps and pickups and stuff. So there's this Taylor system on both of my Taylors are these kind of new prototypes.
Oh, right on.
And they sound really good. I mean, compared to when I record on my albums, I record stereo with a couple of very nice mics, Telefunken mics, but then I also take the direct.
Yep.
And when I pull it up next to the mics, it's like, man, you know, sounds
not
pretty
bad.
Darn good, man. So basically, I just split the signal. And in the stereo mix, you know, have them panned a little bit this way.
Yeah.
And then the Taylor pickup is pretty much just going straight through. So it's just got a little compression and EQ on it.
Yeah.
And then the sound hole pickup drives the effects chain.
Mm-hmm.
So all the effects are being driven by the sound hole pickup. And then it's all blended at the end into one stereo mix, you know, and it sounds pretty phenomenal. Some of the one thing about Fractals is their effects are really, really rich, you know, really, really, and their reverbs and all those things are just fantastic with the Fractal. So, of course, I'm not using any of the amp modeling or speaker or any of that stuff. It's just, you know, I just set it for what you need for acoustic.
Exactly.
Man, it sounds fantastic. It's really a great sound. And the other thing I've got, which is, I've been doing different things. On this guitar, I've got a couple of, you can see.
Oh, banjo tuners?
Yeah.
That's great.
And then you won't be able to hear it, but I have a whammy bar.
Oh, wow.
And this is called Virtual Jeff. So it's a digital whammy bar.
Uh-huh.
and you can there's a box that it hooks into, or it can transmit by Bluetooth as well. So you could set the amount that it goes down and the amount it goes up, mm-hmm. anywhere from like a half a step to like two octaves. I think you have a couple different presets for it, but it sounds fantastic. I mean, it doesn't sound glitchy or anything. It's called Virtual Jeff, and I really, in fact, they just sent me another bar so I can put it on my other Taylor, you know, okay. so I can have it on both of them. But you could put this bar on anything. Yeah. You could put it on a keyboard, anything that makes sound, you know. Okay. You can have a whammy bar on it. So the other one I'm going to just use double stick tape, so if I want to put it on a mandolin or a banjo or whatever, I could just move it around, you know, and try different things. But the way I have it set up now is since I'm using both pickups, only one pickup is being, you know, the signal for one pickup is being bent with the bar.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool because you can have the straight sound, and then you've got all of a sudden the other pickup is going like down a step or something.
That's great.
And you get the combination of the two.
Yeah.
And if I wanted just the one, I would just turn off the volume of the Taylor pickup, and then would just be purely the, you know, that.
Yeah.
But it's been fun, you know, and people, you know, it does, people kind of freak out. They go, how are you doing that?
Yeah, of course. Do you know by any chance Gene Parsons, who invented this?
I know who he is. Yeah, of course. I never knew him, but yeah, the string bender. I've never had a string bender guitar. I would like to get one, and I think there's some of them where it actually depends on two different strings. Like they might have like a
But he also does a string bender on acoustic guitars now.
You do, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I mean, I always thought, well, they have to have like a big block of wood under there or something. Yeah.
Not with the acoustic. It's a different. He's got it rigged a different system, so it's not.
Oh, that's interesting. I think I might have heard about that. Yeah. But anyway, this thing is kind of fun. It's just there's one. I don't use it overuse it. There's maybe one or two songs that I use it on.
Sure, sure.
There's one song where I use the banjo tuners and the bar, and in a combination, and it's pretty cool. You know?
Of course.
With a nice reverb or delay on it. You know, it sounds. Yeah. But I always like playing around with different. The other thing I don't use live, but on my records is I use a Moog guitar.
Oh wow!
Now Moog guitar is not a synthesizer.
Uh-huh.
It's more like an Ebo, you know, like a magnetic.
Sure. Yeah, yeah,
and they don't make them anymore, but I was fortunate enough to buy one a number of years ago, and I often use it on my records in lieu of a keyboard pad, you know, so it's a sustain. So basically, it just gives you endless sustain on whatever chords you're playing.
Yep.
But because it has two magnets, you don't see the magnets. They're built into the body of the guitar. There's one by the bridge and one by the neck.
Wow.
There's a pedal that sweeps the magnetic power. Of course, you have a knob on the guitar that tells you that varies the amount of magnetic pull from completely off to like insane, but the pedal will sweep the magnetic pull between the two magnets, and then so you get all these changing harmonics, you know, so every time you play, you know, whatever you're doing, the chords or whatever, it's just like harmonics and are kind of moving around, and it's a very unique sound. And you could use it subtly too. It works just like a regular electric guitar, but you could turn up a little bit of the power so that you just play, you get a nice, totally clean lead sound, and then when you hold a note, it never dies.
That's fantastic. And then
Moog guitar. They distributed. It was designed by another guy. I forget who it was, but they decided to make them. And it's a fantastic instrument. And I've used it for all kinds of textures. You know, it's just really, really cool.
Yeah. And what about with Al? What are you using for guitars with Al?
Mostly I'm using my, I have two or three Tom Anderson guitars. Two of them are Strat style.
Okay.
One of them has a Floyd Rose and the other one has a Vega Trem, which I love. The Vega Trem is made in Spain. They're like the floating tremolo. It has floating tremolo and locking tuners, and man, those Vega Trems are so expressive.
Yeah.
One of my favorite. I've been recommending those to people. I just love them. And you can kind of pretty much put them in yourself. But anyway, so I have the two sort of Strat style. Then I have a kind of a Tom Anderson modified Tele that's got like three pickups with a Strat pickup and some switching to where you could have any combination of pickups. And then I have some acoustics. I use a one Taylor acoustic, and then I have another one. I think it's an older Washburn. It's almost like a almost kind of solid body, but probably a chambered body thing. It's years old, but it sounds really good plugged in. And so, so I have to use that. We have one song that is sort of based on Crosby, Stills, and Nash. It's a song called Mission Statement. It's all about corporate speak. Okay. The whole song. But it's done in the style of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. So I have that one tuned to that tuning, Stills tuning, whatever it is, or Crosby. I don't know. It's all E's and B's, you know, just bro, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like a Sweet Judy Blue Eyes or whatever.
Sure.
And then I have a mandolin I use on one song, and I have a six-string Deering banjo I use on the polka. And it's really mostly just for strumming type banjo as opposed to, you know, bluegrass, but so it's usually those, like, you know, six or seven instruments, you know. I'd like to bring more, but I don't really have a dedicated guitar tech. Our stage manager, you know, knows guitars, but he's got a lot of things, other things to do.
Absolutely.
So he sets my rig up and it gets it all ready. And but if I, you know, if I had a tech, I'd bring a few more guitars.
Yep.
I have some other ones I've used. Sometimes I've used an Ibanez guitars over the years, and I've got a fairly recent one. If I needed to do any kind of real sort of shred style, you know, stuff, there was a tour a few years ago where we were doing a different set every night, and we had a lot of we would do a different cover in the encore every night too for 77 shows. We did 77 covers.
Oh my God.
But so I had that guitar for some of the heavier things, you know, and then I had a I have a really nice gold top, but I have this for the tour. I brought this Chinese Les Paul that was actually pretty darn good. Sounded great, and I used it on a couple things, where especially if I needed to play slide, like electric slide, I'd use the Les Paul. But yeah, I remember maybe probably 7 or 8 years ago, somebody told me about this company, and you would order the guitar online, and you could kind of tell them how you wanted it. You know, it was like a supposed custom shop, and you could tell them if you wanted it, you know, the finish to look all retro, or if you want it shiny or matte, and what kind of bridge. And so you could specify a number of things. And so I ordered it, and you know, eventually, like 3 months later, I got it. It just came like in a box, of all encased in styrofoam. And I figured, well, I'm going to have to like take it out and have it, you know, take it to somebody and put different pickups in it. And, you know, but I pulled it out of the box and it's like, it played great. And I plugged it in, it was like, man, this thing sounds great. And I remember at the time, I think it was $340, including the shipping.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, wow, you know. And it's a total mahogany with a maple top, you know. Basically, I think the idea was, it was supposed to be like a reproduction of Mark Knopfler's 58 Les Paul.
Wow. What
it was supposed to be, you know.
Yeah.
But it was the price was right, for sure.
Because
I have a gold top with P90s and it's cost a lot more than that.
Sure. Do companies seek you out to? I mean, like Taylor, do they seek you out to use their instruments?
I don't know. Many people really seek me out too much, but I know Taylor has been. I've been with them for years, and you know, I remember, you know, meeting the artist person years ago, and you know, described what style I was doing, and they recommended this particular model, which I still use. It's mahogany. It's cedar top and mahogany body, you know, which I really like for slack key because it's real warm. Yeah. And just the shape of the neck for me is really fits my hand. The way I like the neck. I don't like a neck that's too narrow because I like to be able to get my fingers in there. You know, sometimes, and I have some nice old Martins and stuff. But I like the shape of the neck, the width and the feel of it for what I do, my finger style thing. It seems to work good for me. But you know, I've got relationships with a bunch of companies, it's been really nice. I mean, people I've just sort of met over the years, and sometimes it's just a product that I really, really like, you know. Yeah. And it's like, man, you guys are killing it. I love this stuff. And so oftentimes they'll, you know, get, you know, free stuff. They'll send me things. And it's funny because, you know, when you're a kid, you're saving every dime to try and, you know, buy an something that seems incredibly expensive. Then when you're old enough and you can afford any of that stuff, they give it to you for free.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a strange thing.
What about Al? How does Al treat you pretty well? You guys stay
at
nice hotels and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We have it's, you know, I can't complain. And Al's a sweet guy, and we don't really have any responsibilities other than be on the bus at a certain time
sure.
and play the show, you know,
sure.
and it's kind of like you're being babysat, really, you know, compared to, you know, the crew and what they deal with. But, you know, we travel overnight, which most people do, you know, after the trucks are loaded, all the trucks and buses move. And when we get to the next city, the band goes to a hotel, crew goes to the venue to set up. And then they come and pick us up around 4 or 5, and we have dinner and hang out and play. And, you know, after the show, go hang out on the bus or whatever for a while, and then we do it all over again. So there's not a lot of, you know, there's lots of food. There's, you know, it's kind of, I mean, we're not flying around in, you know, chartered jets or anything like that, but it's very comfortable, you know, and I can't really complain about it.
And on your nails, are those acrylics there you have?
Yeah, these are acrylics, yeah. I it's funny, I had a friend who's played fingerstyle years ago, and he was using acrylics, and he kept telling me, man, you got to chemo, you got to start using these nails. And it's like, I was like, oh man, you have to go to the nail salon. It's like, I don't know. So one day he came by and he had a gift certificate to the nail salon.
Yeah.
And he said, we're going to the nail salon. So we both went, and I got them done. And I came home and I started playing. I was like, man, this is sounds really good, you know.
Yep.
And my nails were never that great. They would, you know, you would,
oh yeah,
one would break, and then I would get a different sound on that one. So now with the acrylics, it's so consistent. And what I do is, I mean, I try, and they're a little bit long right now, I need a file, but I try and keep them really smooth. You know, you have one of these files that has all the different gradations, you know, and you get it to where they're like glass.
Yep.
And then you get a really pure sound. You don't get any kind of scraping or, you know, I've heard some recordings of mine where I didn't have my nails really smooth, and it's like, oh, I can sort of hear a little bit of scraping in there, you know.
Yeah.
But when you have them all, you know, really smooth, it just gets this really just pure sound. And it's just, you know,
yeah.
And this isn't, I really need to file in more of them.
That's beautiful.
Anyway, yeah, it's just pure. You don't get any scraping or extraneous sound. It's just, I like them. So, yeah, I go every, you know, so often and have them adjusted or filled in or whatever. And you just got to remember to kind of keep them under control. I keep the thumbnail long.
Yeah.
And other people I've played tour with, I toured with Lulu Reinhardt on a couple of tours once. He's a descendant of Django. And he does the same thing. He's fingerstyle, but he has a long thumbnail.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we compare him. It's like, mine's longer than yours.
Yeah.
But what's nice is I can use the side of my thumb to get a mellow sound.
Yeah.
And if I just change the angle a little bit, I can dig in and get more of a piano, you know, sound. And I know some classical players I've talked to said they would do that with it. They don't, most classical players use real nails, but sometimes I've met some people that said they would file like this side of it a little more.
Uh-huh.
So when they had this angle, they would get the flesh sound,
yeah.
And then they change the angle and you get the nail. You know,
that's
pretty tricky.
Yeah, it's very tricky.
Yeah.
How did you hook up with Josh?
It's funny. You know, we met actually on Facebook because we were both fans of Kora music. You know, West African Kora music. And I had joined this Facebook group. You know, and I think somehow we connected on there, and I don't know if he heard some of my music or whatever. We just started talking, and he was like, yeah, I'm up in Santa Barbara. And it's like, well, let's get together. And, you know, he said, I've got 3 Ngonis, and, you know, I'll bring some down. And, you know, so we, you know, we got together and we immediately started recording stuff. And, you know, we just talked about our love for that kind of music. And he also plays tabla, you know, Indian tabla. He's quite a good tabla player. And so we started recording tunes, and we put out our first album called Alma Kua. And it was, you know, we did really well with it. We got like 2 or 3 tracks on Sirius XM, and then we decided to do another one, and that ended up getting tracks on Sirius. And and now we've just put out our third album just recently, March 30th. It's called Delphinus, which is a constellation named after a dolphin, but it's sort of a dolphin themed record, you know.
Right on.
And we're both kind of water people, you know. I like to, you know, surf and dive, and, you know,
do you still have surf? A lot of
I boogie board sometimes.
That counts,
you know. Yeah, it counts. It's I was kind of fearless before I, you know, but nowadays, I mean, geez, it's just. And especially, you know, I mean, I like Hawaii, but in California, I always find the water to be too cold. You know, I don't like to get in the water.
I agree.
I used to live right on the beach in Hermosa Beach for a while, and I would hardly ever go in the water because it was just too cold.
Well, Jim, it's been wonderful talking to you. I really appreciate you.
You too, man. I love your room, man. Well, you got a vibe going in there, man.
Well, it's basically a woodshed that we used to rehearse.
I was going to do this in my studio, but I couldn't get my I couldn't find the connector to my light. You know, the light, it was too dark in there.
Yeah.
You know, I got a bunch of stuff in my studio and it looks really cool, but you know. But I appreciate it, man. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure, and I hope I get an opportunity to meet you in person.
All right, man.
Take it easy.
All right, ahui ho, as we say. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com, and I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend, and I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys. We'll be right back.